Number vote.
So this Kenan was composed also by Ruda Levi. It was composed by Ruda Levi, and he was famous for writing the Kuzari. The Kuzari is a discussion between the king of the Kuzar tribe, questioning a Talmud Chacham, a Muslim, and a Christian. And through the story, which Ruda Nasi wrote, the king eventually comes to buy into Judaism, and his entire Kuzar kingdom accepted. But the king then taunts the Talmud Chacham that although he davens three times a day for Tzion, in practice is not willing to leave his comfort and go to Tzion. So the Talmud Chacham decides that he indeed will go. And Rabbi Yehuda Levi, after writing this, he becomes inspired himself and realizes himself he should also be going to Eretz Yisrael. He's the one who's very famously said, Libi b'Mizrach. Those very famous words were said by him. They said, my heart is b'Mizrach, although I'm in the West, but where I really am, where my neshama is b'Mizrach. And there's different versions, historically, of whether he actually ever reached Eretz Yisrael or not, but he wrote this kinna along the way, and he describes through the kinna his longing for the Beis HaMikdash, some beautiful expressions used in the kinna about Eretz Yisrael. While you're reading through the Hebrew, just a glimpse of the English as much as you can. Some very moving expressions. And in fact, I'm just going to read the last few lines in English. Fortunate is he who waits and arrives and witnesses the rising of your light when your dawn bursts forth over him, to behold the goodness of your chosen ones and exult in your joy when you return to the youthfulness of early times. So it's basically davening that Eretz Yisrael should be rejuvenated and it should be brought back to how it was in its youth, i.e. At the time of the Beis HaMikdash. I think every year, this is our fourth year doing this, I'm not sure it's been every year, but I'd like to repeat again the words that I saw from Reb Shlomo Reisman Shlita. Mamash, stunning words. And when I read these words, it gives me a tremendous tshuka for Yerushalayim and for Eretz Yisrael. And that's, I think, what this kinna is about. I want to read it and then discuss just for 1 or 2 minutes some thoughts, some further thoughts. So I saw this it was a letter that Reb Shlomo Reisman had penned in 2019. He goes every year. I believe Asher actually got to know Reb Shlomo Reisman in his trips to Eretz Yisrael every year because he used to learn in Or HaSamech. Right? He would learn Bina's Manim in the summers. He'd go every year to Eretz Yisrael. So that's what he wrote. This is the following. This is after arriving in Eretz Yisrael. He'd been in the summer for a few weeks. He wrote the following. We describe Yerushalayim as the Fei Noif, the beautiful Kala. While the Kala is more beautiful than ever. I arrived here with great anticipation. I was not disappointed. The Yichud room was special. Yerushalayim embraced me and assured me direct reception in my Torah learning and a direct line for my tefillahs. The reception here is extraordinary, direct. I stood on Har HaZeisim and looked towards Yerushalayim. I have a new understanding of the prophecy in Zechariah. As you may know, from Har HaZeisim, we can clearly see the Har HaBayis and the Domes of Shame. But I saw much more. As far as the eye could see, to the left and to the right, north and south, there's a panorama of new homes and yeshivas. The eyes can also see for miles eastward, beyond the old city. For a moment, I felt like Moshe Rabbeinu feeling the joy of gazing into the land from the top of the mountain. I saw thousands, perhaps 10,000 buildings and apartments in one exciting moment. Arab East Jerusalem is dwarfed by a tidal wave of our new, elegant, tall and holy buildings. The long exiled children of Yerushalayim are coming home. When I was born, the mountains that neighbor Yerushalayim were empty. Shu'onim Hilchuvoy. 60 years ago, there were only scattered neighborhoods with small buildings, and now there are more Jews within my vision today than there were in all of Israel a century ago. Far more. I swelled with pride as I looked around me again and again. I could barely contain myself. And I've been reviewing the image in my mind's eye ever since. That's only me. Imagine the joy the Kala's feeling. No wonder she opens her heart to all who want to feel her. And now I get it. Zechariah has a prophecy of the days of Mashiach. In a powerful prophecy, he speaks of Harazesim splitting in half. Why? It was never clear, but now it is. When I was born, Harazesim's view, what the Malachim saw all day, all year, was primarily a view of the two unfortunate mosques, little else. It was that way for centuries. Today, the mountain rejoices in its unique view of the return. The mountain too swells with pride. Every week a new building. Cranes that reach higher and higher heavenward. The pride of Harazesim. In a moment of joy, the mountain will strain in all directions. And it will split to provide a direct path to Harabais. The joy is there already. It's a mystery, it doesn't split right now. This is what the Kinnah is describing at the end, when it says, "Fortunate is he who waits and arrives, and when it is the rising of your light, when your dawn bursts forth over him." I was listening recently to some Jewish history podcast about the beginning of Reform, and about how one of the things they did was is they removed Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, Beis HaMikdash, Mashiach. They removed that from davening. For anyone today to even have the audacity to even think that anyone would try and put that in today would be completely crazy. 200 years ago, when Reform was starting, just 200 years ago, Eretz Yisrael wasn't a reality. It was a concept. Who went to Eretz Yisrael? They didn't even know. People tried to get there. Maybe they got there. Maybe they didn't. It was a concept. It was a theme. It was something that they may have spoken about. But a reality? A place which is Jewish? A place which is majority Jews? A place which today has majority of Jews living in, as far as I know? That wasn't something they can think of. So to them, Reform were able to even suggest such a thing. And they did that. And obviously they got lost from Yiddishkeit, as we know. But the concept of Eretz Yisrael back then was just a concept. What we've seen over the past 80 years has been miraculous. It's made Eretz Yisrael a reality again. And the way that Rabbi Yisrael Reisman describes it really speaks to us and tells us how fortunate we are to be living through this time period. It's the next stage of Klal Yisrael. But there's a machshava I had, and that is that the experience that we're experiencing at the moment, and he alludes to it even in what he's saying, is what Moshe Rabbeinu had when he was on the other side. And he was out to look in, but he was told, "You're not going to have it." We are now at that time when we're so close. Eretz Yisrael is now reality. Therefore, the Beis HaMikdash, the concept of the Beis HaMikdash, the concept of Mashiach, the concept of us all being there and having not just an Eretz Yisrael which is run by Jews, but an Eretz Yisrael which is Jewish, an Eretz Yisrael which Torah Yisrael is being practiced in Eretz Yisrael, it's something we can see it happening. But we're not there yet. So in a way, being Misabal Yerushalayim for us is perhaps even more real than it was 200, 300 years ago. Because it's not a concept that we've been miyash from, and we sort of say all sorts of Mashalim, it doesn't really mean Eretz Yisrael, it means something else. No, we can see that we're nearly there. And we're like Moshe Rabbeinu on the other side. And this is something we need to think about. It's something we need to be aware of. And we also need to mourn. It's something we need to mourn. We need to mourn that we have Eretz Yisrael, and we're so close, but we're yet so far. My kids were talking about, with Mitzvah Hashem, going to Eretz Yisrael, in Ezer Hashem in a few days. Hopefully we'll all be going. We were talking about our plans for the summer, and we mentioned, one of my kids mentioned something about, said the name Tel Aviv. We're not going anywhere near that place. There's no go zones in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, if someone needs to be Makarov, etc., there might be a heterium to go there. But there are certain places which unfortunately in our holy land, they're just far, far, far from where they're supposed to be. Far from where they're supposed to be. We've got a government, but again, it's not run by people who we would necessarily look at as role models. I'm not saying they're bad people, but we want an Eretz Yisrael which is as it's supposed to be. So near, but yet so far. And as we say this kinnah, we have to bear that in mind and be aware, what can we do? The things that we can do really are more mitzvahs, more Masmur Tovim. Ideally for those that can, make the move to Eretz Yisrael. Well, how does it help to move to Eretz Yisrael? Because the more of us that move to Eretz Yisrael, the more Eretz Yisrael gets flooded by from Yidden. The more that it's possible to slowly bring the Gula closer. For those that can't, more mitzvahs, more Masim Tovim, and more tefillahs. Siyun hali sishali lishloi masirai Dosh lishloi mich vahim yasar adarai Miyom mizrach misof misimon Shloim rochay bekaray v'chim kalavaray V'shloim asir tikvon oisim demov kitha chermoin V'nichsav ritam hararay Tepkoy zelosei chanim tanim V'yitzach elayim sheivas shuvasei Chanichi nor lishiray Libi levi yisrael v'vnei eilom avin yemet Machanayim chanigitay ray Shomar shkinosh v'nach v'yitri Chosach nivu sharay Shachay sharay V'yitzin lele v'azay moiray V'yitzin zahar v'shemesh v'yitzin chovim moiray Okay, we're going to take a look now at our last kinnah before reading through Elisiyon, and we're going to look at the kinnah composed by Rabbi Shlomo Halberstam, the Baba Varava, Zichruno. So we know that, even till today, a lot of tzoras, especially mental health tzoras, are from the Holocaust. From survivors of children, grandchildren, and the suffering still today. And the Gedolim, post-Europe, were not supportive necessarily of having a different day than Tisha B'Av to commemorate the Holocaust, for the mourning of the Holocaust, because in Kinah Chaf Hei, by regarding the Crusades, the Kinnah speaks out clearly that Tisha B'Av is supposed to be the day that's concentrated, that's where we discuss all the Avelos of Klal Yisrael, because we understand that the Tzoras that Klal Yisrael go through is all due to the Churban. And therefore, even the atrocities of the Holocaust are supposed to be, we've got Chiyuv to discuss them on Tisha B'Av, to try and realize some of the, I can't even say the word, I want to say some of the sorrow of the Holocaust, but we can't really ever describe it. I was reading recently from Annie Wazell, he's got a book, and I was reading a book which he brought out 25 years after the Holocaust, and he was explaining a question which I'd always had, which was why was it that so many survivors refused to talk about the Holocaust? And he says, in his opinion, the reason for it is because words limit an experience. And they were simply petrified to talk about it because they knew they would not be able to articulate the experiences and emotions that they went through. And therefore, once they realized that, they just weren't able to open their mouths. When you can't explain something, there's no point. And if you just read through the kinnah itself, I'm just going to read through some of the English. I personally find talking about the Holocaust very, very difficult. mainly because, as Ali Wiesel said, I haven't got a clue. I don't really know. I mean, no one can get their mind around the concept of 6 million Jews being killed. But we need to try. We need to try. So I just want to read some of the words from the Kina and then talk a little bit about some experiences which people had to allow us to connect somewhat to the Churban. I'm literally going to read it in English. Remember, please, and lament, O all of Israel, let your voices be heard on high. For Germany has destroyed our people during stormy days of the World War, with killings, horrible and cruel, with starvation and thirst. For all generations do not forget, until you merit witnessing the ultimate consolation. Remember their screams and their weeping as they were tightly packed and locked into the train's cattle cars. Like sheep to the slaughter, they were led to be incinerated in the crematorium ovens. Let the sound of their pleading cries be eternally remembered by the one who dwells in the heavens. When they proclaimed Shema Yisrael, they offered up their lives to the Lord of Lords. Rosh Yeshiva and the students and the multitudes of your people were there. They enslaved them with brutal tortures and they slaughtered them with high-handed arrogance. The blood of tender babies cry out to you from earth, saying, exact vengeance, and the children and the women. Let no living soul escape alive. Every single line over here should really bring certain pictures of what we have heard over the years. For the burning of thousands of study halls and synagogues, and for myriad of Torah scrolls and their students, we shall lament with raised and screaming voices. They set God's sanctuaries aflame, they ignited them, and our eyes witnessed this. Let those who lit the fire suffer retribution. May God judge the corpse-filled nations. The literature that's written about the Holocaust is just immense. I just want to share a couple of short stories that I've seen that moved me. There's an affidavit which was read out by Hermann Friedrich Grebe. It was read out by the Nuremberg trials. And this is a non-Jew. This is in the Yad Vashem archives. I found it in the Yad Vashem archives. And I'm just going to read some of the things. Which this is a non-Jew. He just describes the things which happened. He says, on October the 5th, 1942, at the time of my visit to the construction office in Dubna, my foreman, Hubert Meinix, living at, told me that some Dubna Jews had been shot near the building in three huge ditches about 30 metres long and 3 metres deep. The number of people killed daily was about 1,500. The 5,000 Jews who had lived in Dubna before the pogrom were all marked for liquidation. Since the executions took place in the presence of my employee, he was painfully impressed by them. Accompanied by Meinix, I then went to the work area. I saw great mounds of earth about 30 metres long and 2 high. Several trucks were parked nearby. Armed Ukrainian militia were making people get out under the surveillance of SS soldiers. The same men responsible for guard duty and driving the trucks. The people in the truck wore the regulation yellow pieces of cloth that identified them as Jews on the front and back of their clothing. We went straight towards the ditches without being stopped. When we neared the mound, I heard a series of rifle shots close by. The people from the trucks, men, women and children, were forced to undress under the supervision of an SS soldier with a whip in his hand. They were obliged to put their effects in certain spots. Shoes, clothing and underwear separately. I saw a pile of shoes, about 800 to 1,000 pairs, great heaps of underwear and clothing. Without weeping or crying out, these people undressed and stood together in family groups, embracing each other and saying goodbye while waiting for a sign from the SS soldier who stood on the edge of the ditch, a whip in his hand too. During the 15 minutes I stayed there, I did not hear a single complaint or plea for mercy. I watched a family of about 8. A man and woman about 50 years old, surrounded by the children of about 1, 8 and 10, and 2 big girls about 20 and 24. An old lady, her hair completely white, held the baby in her arms, rocking it and singing it a song. The infant was crying aloud with delight. The parents watched the groups with tears in their eyes. The father held the 10-year-old boy by the hand, speaking softly to him. The child struggled to hold back his tears. Then the father pointed a finger to the sky, and stroking the child's head, seemed to be explaining something. At this moment, the SS near the ditch called something to his comrade. The latter counted off some 20 people and ordered them behind the mounds. The family of which I had just spoken was in the group. I still remember the young girl passing near me, pointed at herself, saying, 23 years old. I walked around the mound and faced a frightful common grave. Tightly packed corpses were heaped so close together that only the head showed. Most were wounded in the head and the blood flowed over their shoulders. Some still moved. Others raised their hands and turned their heads to show that they were still alive. The ditch was two-thirds full. I estimate that it held 1,000 bodies. I turned my eyes towards the man who had carried out the execution. He was an SS man. He was seated, legs swinging on the narrow edge of the ditch. An automatic rifle rested on his knees and he was smoking a cigarette. He continues. This wasn't even in the camps. They would go from village to village. A few weeks ago I was by a mass grave and you could see the village near it. We went with Rabbi Wilson and he was saying how that particular village, he said it was a village like Manchester, had different types of Yidden, Chassidim, Litvaks, Mizrahi, people that weren't from, all different types, different Meisters, and the entire city was marched to a mass grave and the village ended there. The problem is that it's so far from our reality, we can hardly even imagine it. And the decisions they had to face, there's a sefer actually called Mimamakim that brings various shailas that were asked during the Holocaust. I saw yesterday, I was reading through it, one of the shailas was, someone said, can I say Shlo Yasani Ovid? How can I say Shlo Yasani Ovid anymore? The answer's amazing. For a different time, but these were things which we can't understand. By the liberation, Lieutenant Birnbaum writes some of the experiences that he saw. He was part of the liberating forces, and he writes in his introduction to his book that he came into Buchenwald, and he describes a scene there, full of dead bodies. The Nazis had gone, and on the way out they tried to kill as many as they could, and then they fled. They knew that the war was over, full of corpses. And he saw this Polish boy, a teenager, walking around. He describes him like a skeleton. He was wearing nothing from the waist down. He'd been left. The Nazis had walked out. He'd been left, and he was walking around, and he was asking for bread. And the 16-year-old boy, when he sees Lieutenant Birnbaum, he sees someone Jewish, he says, Ich bin a Yid, Lieutenant Birnbaum says. And he hadn't seen another Yid who wasn't in the same state as him for years. And he says, teach me how to do teshuvah. Ich will teshuvah ton, ich muss ton teshuvah. And Lieutenant Birnbaum says, why? You need to do teshuvah. You've been through hell. You've been through Gehenna. Any description of Gehenna wouldn't even come close to this. And the boy says, see those gallows over there? He said, 2 months ago, there was a commander who took myself and my father. I brought the two of us together, and my father was on the gallows. And the commander said that one of you has to die. And he looked at me, and he said to me, it's either you or your father. One of you has to die. Kill your father, or I'm going to kill you. And he described to Lieutenant Birnbaum how him and his father looked at each other in despair. What are we supposed to do? And his father commanded him, kick the chair. And he said, I kicked the chair. He killed his own father. And the boy looked at left hand Perlman. And he said, how am I supposed to do teshuva for this? We've been through such sorrows, a tormented nation. Put us through psychological torture. There's someone called Chaim Shapiro, who came to Berdichev after the war. And he stood by the kever of Reb Levi Yitzchak. He said, Hashem, I want to tell you a story, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He said, I'm by the kever of Reb Levi Yitzchak. And talk like Reb Levi Yitzchak. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I feel ill betzeil in a maisa. He said, when I was a kid, my father took me to shul. And in the shul, there's different types of people. There's sensitive men. And there's one particular sensitive man. And I was on the way to get an aliyah. And I knocked him on the way to get an aliyah. And the man, who's a sensitive man, he gave me a frask. And my father, who saw this, ran over to this man and said, that's my son. Keep your hands off him. And he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why didn't you do the same? We've received a frask. Why didn't you do the same? And he writes that he went to America and he told this man over to Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky and they cried together. But they remain maminim. They remain maminim through everything. I think besides for attempting to feel the Churban, Europa, I think we also need to take a bit of chizuk as well from some of the survivors and what they did. Rav Osher Weiss's father, he went through Auschwitz, and the father of Osher described that when he was in Auschwitz, the Klausenberg Rebbe, he heard that the Klausenberg Rebbe was there as well, and they were old friends from their youth, and he went to try and find the Klausenberg Rebbe. And when he met him, the Rebbe says to him, I'm sorry, look at me. I said, I can't save you. I can't save you. I know you've searched for me. I can't save you. And Rabbi Weiss said to the Rebbe, I'm not looking for a physical savior. I'm looking for someone to talk and learning with. He says, that's going to save me. I want the Torah. A couple of weeks ago, Naftali Schiff came to Masifta to show the boys a video. Mamash, I'd highly encourage anyone to watch it. It's a documentary about a story that many of us in Manchester know the basics of. I'll repeat the basics now, but it brings it to life tremendously, and you can hear from the people themselves that happened to. It's a documentary over many years, and. So most of us here, a lot of us here will remember Yaakov Yosef Weiss. He spoke here. He spoke here in Tishbov. He probably said over his story. So I'll just say over the details of the story again. It's funny because Ramot Harapport told me when a few weeks ago in Poland. Before the trip had started, he said, you should know the story of Yaakov Yosef Weiss. I'll say that the basic details are is that he went into the gas chambers on Simchas Torah, they locked the door, and it was opened up again. That was the basic details. And Ramotcha told me the story, and then Ramotcha said to me, by the way, although I heard it from Yaakov Yosef Weiss, people told me he must have had funny memories or gone a bit weird because it's impossible. You'll see on Naftali Schiff's documentary, it's documented. It's documented, and he found many other people who were part of that chevra that happened to. So these are facts. The story, basic story, then I'll tell you the postscript, The basic story was that we know that Hungary the Holocaust only really hurt Hungary about 1944. And you're talking about over a couple of months, hundreds of thousands were taken to Auschwitz. And they had for some reason, special barracks for young men, like young teenagers. And they took, it seems that this particular barracks, they wanted to torture especially. And they took them step by step to the gas chambers on auspicious days of the Jewish year. On Rosh Hashanah, they took a whole load of them. On Yom Kippur, they took a whole load of them. And then the remaining ones was going to be liquidated on Simchas Torah. And they get taken into the gas chambers. And the whole way that Yaakov Yosef Weiss describes how there was someone who had known the whole time, and he said, well, even now you're going to have emunah? And Yaakov Yosef said, always a ma'amin. And the Maisa, they were put into the gas chambers, lights are off, it's completely dark. They're all saying Shema. He describes how people were saying Shema, kids were screaming to their parents. Don't forget, you're talking about 12, 13-year-olds. So the thing that they're going to do when they suddenly feel pain is, you know, tap into the inner child that they still are and start screaming for the parents. And he describes that moment, and then the doors were opened. Again, I encourage you all to watch it. Mamash Kadai. You get a big, massive chizuk, because the interview will be shemit teremitzah, so you can hear their mona. But something fascinating that Naftali added as a postscript, he said that the family allowed him to say it, but they didn't want it to be as part of the official documentary. He said that after they were liberated from the camps, then they were homeless. It was Yaakov Yosef and a few friends were completely homeless. They had nowhere to go to. And being boys without anywhere to go, constantly being sent from place to place, walking around, They were starting to drop some of their Yiddishkeit, even not necessarily their money, but they these are kids. Again, what they're this time 13, and they weren't really observing anything. And Yaakov Yosef told Naftali Schiff that one day they're walking these three boys, three teenagers through some village in Europe, and a Yid pops out from a shul. It sounds like one of these stories made up. But he said it. And a Yid pops out from a shul and says, amazing, Yidden, can you join us for a minyan? And they said, one of them, I think Yaakov Yosef said, don't really do that sort of thing anymore. They said, Medafa Tenta, we need a tenth man. And it's Simchas Torah. He said, oh, Simchas Torah. He said, oh, I haven't said Gomel yet for what happened to me last year in Simchas Torah. Or whatever it was, 2 years before the Simchas Torah. He said, Beseda, we'll come in. And they went in. But again, like he said, don't forget, people that drop things after the Holocaust. But he described, he got his aliyah, and he described as he took the Sefer Torah, and he said, Asher bucha buni mikol ha'amim. You've chosen us, v'nos anonus, terosai. He said, he felt at that moment all the energy coming back in. All of the energy coming back in. And that was it. From then he moved on. I think the lesson we need to take from people from the Holocaust was their emunah. I think their emunah peshutta, the emunah peshutta of these people that came out and kept Yiddishkeit was just something amazing. And I think as we move towards Chatzos and we move towards hope, because that's what it's all about. We're not sitting here just to feel down. We're sitting here to remember to feel that we've done that. We've remembered, we've felt, we've tried to take lessons. It's to the message is from the Holocaust is the emunah. Continuous emunah kodesh baruch hu. Whatever happens, we have Eibishter in Himmel who's always looking after us. And we know we've been told, we believe it, Mashiach's going to come, all the tzaras are going to end, all the persecution that Klal Yisrael have gone through will somehow make sense. Today, we have no idea how. Somehow, when Mashiach comes, we'll understand everything. Now to even say it sounds cruel. That all makes sense. That's because we don't understand it. But that day will come, and we have to be mammon in that, and we have to take the lesson from these survivors, from these amazing tzaddikim, Ani Mammon Ve'Emunah Shlema. So we're going to sing Ani Mammon together. We're then going to say the kina for Churban Yorpa, and then sing Eli Tzion together. Sorry, I didn't realize the time.
Ani Mammon.